Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to deep dive minute by minute into the cinematic adaptations of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, Zach.
I'm John.
Well, welcome back, John. Week three is upon us.
That it is, and I'd like to start off this week, first and foremost, recognizing I fucked up on my timing the last couple episodes.
That is correct.
So we have gone back, we have reset. We've calibrated and we are both on the same page and we should be good at this point.
I'm going to say it wasn't really your fault though. It was more of like a difference of platforms because I was watching this on Apple TV Plus, yeah. Not a plug.
And I was watching on the Max web player. And like one thing that I've noticed is that the Apple TV version of Dune, has one extra second of like black screen at the front end before the Sardaukar voice like kicks in.
That might not mean a lot to most people, but when you're doing a minute by minute show, that can throw everything off.
Yeah, it can. we've corrected. We're both watching on Apple TV at this point, and we should be good to go. So,
all right. Thanks for making the drive back over to the studio, aka my living room.
Yeah. You said that joke and I did earlier and it did not click with me until now.
Oh yes. So. Oh yes. Well, we've got the mics on these new mic stands. We've got a cat who's very interested in the levels that are displaying on the TV.
Yeah.
And let's talk about some Dune, specifically minute 10 through 11.
Okay.
This minute starts with some looking and stamping and ends with some dunking.
America runs on Duncan. I guess Arrakis runs on Duncan.
For a brief moment.
So we get the minute starts with us being stared at by the sister of the Bene Gesserit at the ceremony of the change, I guess is what we'll call it.
Yeah.
I don't think it has any official name.
No.
But given that it's, you know, run by the Herald of the Change, we'll call it the Ceremony of the Change.
And that scene, importantly, not in the book.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
I guess it makes more sense for the movie to just kind of like speed things up and shit. And
yeah, you know. Yeah. We get dropped right into it halfway.
Yeah. What are you on?
I swear, as soon as we start doing this, he's calm and like collected. Every minute of every day, except when we start doing this and he starts getting crazy.
He just really wanted to like sniff the top of your fireplace there.
I guess. I don't know.
Leave all of that in, by the way.
Sure.
Yeah. Soul's important to this. we're being stared at by the sister of the Bene Gesserit after previously, you know, In at the end of last minute, we had the look of concern on Jessica's face and everything. And, you know, she clearly something's not settling right with her. But we then get a hard cut to a different angle of the camera kind of behind the table. And we see the sister of the Bene Gesserit staring at us. And then we get a close up of Leto's fist pressing the Atreides seal into the gold wax.
Yep.
The Atreides seal is, I would assume, an eagle?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I don't think they ever make that abundantly clear in the movie.
No, I mean, you see it in like different flags and stuff later, but they don't say.
You see it, it's a bird figure. Yeah. So I would assume the eagle.
They do more of a show don't tell where instead of like one character looking at it and going, cool eagle on your flag. Yeah, they don't do that.
Well, you know, it could be a falcon. It could be a hawk. You know, there's a lot of
fair enough
raptors.
Fair enough.
The camera then changes to a view from in front of Leto's body as he, you know, kind of steps away from the table, and we see the Bene Gesserit sister just kind of glancing down at the imprinted seal.
These Bene Gesserits, they love the ominous looks.
They do. They just really love just.
You think that's a class they take at the Bene Gesserit school?
It's brooding 101.
Yeah, brooding.
Yeah, probably.
Very good at it.
Before we get too far away from it, though, we get another, you know, look at the super awesome scroll with like the black paper and the gold lettering and shit. Because, of course, like if it's from the Emperor, it's going to be gaudy as all hell. But
this the Herald of the Change does not have a, you know, an actual name in the movie.
Yeah.
So in my notes, I've just been calling him Herald.
Okay.
Which I think works.
It works.
Yeah. So I have here, this is in quotes. "So it's done" is the question that, that Leto asked Harold. When I saw this, you know, when I was really like watching this for the show, I picked up a little bit of a, "Was this needed?" vibe from that. Like
it was, so it was very much a, this meeting could have been an email.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like it's just, there's no, this whole thing, this ceremony, I think, I mean, they flew all the way over here for this, what, 10 minute?
Not even.
Not even 10 minute of a 10 minutes of a ceremony. So yeah.
Yeah.
Could have been an email.
You just need it. You know, could have just sent me the PDF and I would have signed it.
So after Harold's sick collar, we get a cut to what I initially thought was Scotland.
Yeah.
So, I've been up in the Scottish Highlands a little bit, and I think you have as well.
No,
no, oh, sorry.
Been to Ireland, but Ireland, not to okay. not to Scotland.
Gotcha. This looked very much like one of the like the hills around one of the loch, one of the lochs in that area, and so I had to look it up. I was wrong.
Yeah,
it is in Norway.
Okay,
it was filmed in Norway.
I knew Caladan was all shot in one of the Nordic countries, but I didn't know quite which one. So, it's gorgeous. It's really cool.
The specific location in Norway, and I'm going to butcher this, Stadlandet, Stadlandet. Stadlandet.
That's what I would say. I mean, I don't know.
All right. Well,
sorry
don't,
if you
don't email us.
Sorry if you're Norse. but yeah, no, it's super cool. I can't tell if it's like a lake or a river or something, but it's definitely like on top of some kind of.
Yeah, I mean, just
plateau or
what little I know of that location on Earth. You know, the Norway. I would imagine it's some kind of like fjord or inlet or something like that.
Yeah.
But again, I only have like Scotland as a point of comparison, and that's really not too much of a comparison.
No. What's so okay. I'm going to put on a geography nerd hat here for a second and talk about our world instead of Caladan. So we're in Atlanta, right? We're in the foothills of the Appalachians.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the historical record of, and this is going to make sense here in a second. If you look at the historical record of land masses on Earth, the Scottish Highlands are a part of the same mountain range as the Appalachians,
sure,
which are a part of the same mountain range that are in Norway and Sweden.
So
in a sense,
we are in Caladan.
We are.
Okay. I figured that's where you're going with this.
Yeah.
Cool. We live in Caladan. Well, that was just a few million years ago. So I think the environments have changed just a smidge.
Just a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, so over this sweeping landscape, we see a cool-ass wing-type ship start to fly over and just cut through the water, or right on top of the water.
The edge of the wing tip, yeah. Just kind of like... Very slices cool. the surface of the water.
A continuing theme that we're going to see throughout these is just how cool all the ships and different vehicles look. I don't know, just the design department. Again, I'm going to continue to shout their praise. The whole movie did such a great job with this.
Yeah, I love that the ship is off center from its wings too.
Sure,
like it's like a 60-40-ish kind of split or whatever with the cabin.
I was going to go 65-35, but you know, whatever.
Okay. Listen here, you piece of shit. But No, I just think it's like they could have just been like, yeah, we're just going to fucking like put the cabin in the middle. But like just that little offset just makes it feel a little more alien and a little more weird. And yep. I dig it.
Yep. Yep. So the ship pulls into the garage and we get a cool landing scene. A mysterious hooded figure.
I believe it's a hangar rather than a garage.
Ship garage. mysterious hooded figure in a flight suit walks out, and we get the word Landville, which is pretty neat.
I had Landville in my notes, good, and I was going to ask you about Landville, because who the hell is Landville? Is he important at all?
Made up for the movie.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Not important so much in this movie. It plays a part, a large part in the second movie. He gets referenced in this scene. I think maybe twice, and you see him in the background in a couple of different scenes throughout the movie. We'll get there, and I'll point him out as we see him. The one scene, I a little bit of research that I did, one scene that he was in on Seleucus Secundus was cut from the movie. Like his only like speaking lines, I think, in this show, or not his only speaking lines, but like,
yeah, because he has speaking lines here.
Yes,
his speaking line is
we'll dial it in.
Yeah. Cool.
I have the notes that this hooded figure does some Star Trek techno babble to Landville.
The stabilizers are too loose. Yeah. I don't think that's necessarily Star Trek techno babble.
What does that mean in context, though? I mean, it seems like Star Trek techno babble.
Okay, all right.
To me,
I mean, I'm not a pilot, but I would assume that modern day planes have stabilizers of some sort.
And do you dial them in?
You can probably tighten the resistance that those have when you mess with the yoke on a plane.
Hey everyone, this is Zach from the future. I realized as I was editing this that we had some technical difficulties with some of the sound right at this minute, and we had to cut a little section out. So we jumped back into what we were talking about rather abruptly. I just wanted to give you a heads up on exactly why it sounds so disjointed. So yeah, back to the show. So John and I were talking about some honestly things we don't know anything about.
Yeah, no, I'm not a pilot. I don't.
The stabilizers, I still think it's a little bit, you know, verging on Star Trek techno babble. Apparently real planes and probably fighter jets have stabilizers in them of some sorts. I would assume
that they do. Hold on. I want to make this abundantly clear. I am talking out of my ass here.
Okay. Right. We'll move on. So the figure exits the ship, has his conversation with Landville. We'll dial them in, takes off his helmet. And who is it? Duncan motherfucking Idaho.
I have that exact line in my notes. Duncan motherfucking Idaho.
Silly name, dope as shit character.
Yeah. Who is Duncan Idaho, Zach?
So Duncan Idaho is him and Gurney Halleck are part of the, I guess, like top council for Leto Atreides.
Mm-hmm.
They are responsible for, among other things, giving Paul a lot of his training. So weapons training. And just, you know, flight training and all this, all the things that, you know, his education basically.
Okay.
Aside from that, they are also responsible for training the Atreides troops. So, Duncan is, I mean, very clearly, I think this scene sets up that he's a very good pilot.
I would assume so if he's like test piloting this craft or whatever.
Yeah. I'll talk more about Duncan's backstory as we get to know him a little bit better.
Okay.
But that is his, like, at a high level relationship with the Atreides family. He's one of Leto's closest advisors. He's on his, you know, council.
Sure.
He's right up there with Gurney Halleck and Thufir Hawat. He's yeah, cool guy.
So Thufir Hawat, Gurney Halleck, Duncan Idaho are the three amigos.
Yes.
In this proverbial case.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Then we get a line from Paul that says, "We're Duncan is going to Arrakis early, but why?"
Now that's we don't know because we don't know the minute ends literally here with, so you're going to Arrakis tomorrow.
Yep. That's it. So we'll have to wait till tomorrow to really find out why Duncan is going to Arrakis early. But yeah, what any other notes on this minute?
I just think it's a really cool minute to kind of show off a little more about Caladan. And what an intro for Duncan Idaho.
Yeah.
Right? Like what a badass.
Just drifting over the water.
Do that like little skate with the wing on the water, and then like you're walking down, you've got your pilot's helmet on still, telling the mechanics, you know, and the crew what needs to be done. And then you just, you know, walk out. Paul's excited to see Duncan, and Duncan refers to Paul as my boy.
My boy.
Yeah. Clearly not his son, but you know, they're homies.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
But yeah, also once again, casting Jason Momoa as Duncan Idaho.
Jason Momoa as Duncan Idaho. Great.
Perfect.
I did not expect that casting going into this movie. Like I'm trying to remember back to 2021. I really didn't know a lot of the casting that they had released. I guess I wasn't like super clued into it, but when I saw Jason Momoa as Duncan Idaho, I was like, oh, that's cool. That fits really well. I mean, it's a very good choice. I'm trying to reach back in my memory to see what he was described as in the books, but it fits, you know, like he is a warrior. He is one of their tactical trainers.
Yeah. Jason Momoa is not a small guy.
No.
So it makes sense that, you know, you have Paul Atreides, who's, you know, tiny little Timothy Chalamet. And then you have, you know, Duncan Idaho, who is just absolute monster beast of a human Jason Momoa. So yeah.
I think it's important to note here that none of this happens in the books. Like these interactions, this introduction to Duncan Idaho, this conversation that he, you know, will have with Paul, does not happen in the books. We're dropped right into basically like the weeks leading up to the Atreides going to Arrakis in the book. Duncan Idaho is referenced, but he, at the point in the books where he is referenced, he has already gone to Arrakis.
Okay. So
we meet him as a character later on in the books. And like he gets, you know, dialogue and whatnot, but he's only referenced right now, and he's already gone.
Okay.
But that would have been very strange.
If Jason Momoa just shows up randomly halfway through the movie, he's like, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah. I think it's good to, it's a good change from the books, because it gives you a lot of the like relationships that, we have between these two, between all the different characters. And it's good storytelling from a movie standpoint. It's one of those things that it can't be translated one for one from a book to the screen. These are the artistic liberties that the director and screenwriter have to take, to make this a digestible movie. And it, you know, it accomplishes a lot of different things here. So yeah, it's a good scenes.
Making this a digestible movie, I think, is the theme throughout this entire podcast. Yeah. So, but yeah, so Duncan's going to Arrakis tomorrow. We don't know why yet, because this minute is over.
That's right.
I don't know about you. To me, this is probably a 3 or 4, 3, 3.5 Shai Hulud out of 10 Shai Hulud minute, just because there's not too much that's going on. I mean, we do get Duncan Idaho's introduction.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's half of the minute is wide shots of various scenes of Caladan.
Yeah, that's very fair. And the whole like the ending of the change ceremony, not a lot of that goes on there. It's got some brooding looks. So yeah, I'll join you in that. The 3.5 or so.
Keeping our Shai Hulud meter in check here. Exactly. Of course.
We're still just 10 minutes into the movie, so a lot more to come.
Yes. 10 minutes into a 2 hour and 35 minute yes. movie.
All right, cool. Well, if that's it, then we will be back tomorrow to talk about the next minute of Dune. And John, I hope you can come back.
I'll plan on being here.
All right. See you then.
See you.